And to 25 minutes, actually almost 26 minutes after the hour here, Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist, a vintner by trade now, and a member of the board at Creation Moments. And Don has been with us almost every Tuesday for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, almost 10 years now. 10, 11 years, 10 years, Don.
Yeah, something like that. It's been a long time.
Yeah. You'd be able to put your Broken Road Radio experience on your resume.
Yeah. It's about time. Do you think?
I think you qualify. Don is a biochemist, and we take advantage of his years of experience in pharmaceuticals. We've talked about through the whole COVID thing. We've been talking about vaccines and masking and lockdowns, and we've learned a lot from him and his resources. Today we go back to climate change. I'm tempted to say global warming, because those two terms, I guess, have become synonymous. They couldn't convince people of global warming, so maybe climate change is more saleable, you know? But they're still pointing to things like the Maui fires in Hawaii being caused by climate change. Even the governor of Hawaii says, well, that's climate change, that's global warming, when his own organization, well, Maui County, is suing the power company for being at fault for not maintaining power lines and actually kicking off those fires. And there are other people around the country, a lot of Democrats, and saying, well, see, pointing to the hot summer we've been having. At least areas around the world are having very warm summers, including Texas. And they're saying, aha, global warming or climate change, whichever appeals to you most. There's some evidence to the contrary, though, Don, and this article from the Cornwall Alliance talks about it.
Oh, it does. It does. And, you know, they're trying to, of course, blame everything on CO2, carbon dioxide. But carbon dioxide really isn't the issue here. There are many things going on this year that, you know, have kind of culminated in heating things up, at least locally, I mean, in spots, because the heating hasn't been globally. I mean, it's not like every part of the world is hot. There are some parts of the world that are cold and colder than cooler than normal. So we can't really say that, okay, the whole world is heating up, but only spots are heating up. And for example, and obviously you've mentioned Texas being one of them, we've had some rain in the past day or two, but not where we live.
Nah, we had a few thunderstorms locally here. We're about 100 miles southwest of Don, out in Ungard Valley. We're in central Texas as well. So the rain was welcome. There wasn't a lot of it. We do have water restrictions in this area. You're only allowed to water your lawn twice a week on specific days, depending on your house number. We could see the rivers in the area are low. A lot of dry ground showing that normally doesn't. So the weather has been a factor here. This has been an unusual summer, but when you put it in the context of the whole world, are we seeing global warming?
We're not seeing global warming this year. Yes, okay, we've got spots of warmer, which seemed warmer than usual, but, you know, I can remember 2 years ago, it was hot. Last year, it was hot during the summer, hot and dry. This year, it's hot and dry. So was it an isolated case? No. And when we planted the vineyard in 2011, it was so hot and dry. It was the third year of a drought, and our one-acre pond completely dried up, and we're planting a vineyard. It was only by God's grace and him saying, you know, plant the vineyard, that we planted the vineyard, because it was crazy to be planting a vineyard when you don't have any water to water the vineyard. But by the time we got all the vines in, of course, our pond was full again, and that was in November of that year, 2011, when we had the drought. So we've got similar conditions now as we did back then. And I think we've had so far this year maybe 45 days without rain where we are locally. And there seems to be spots of these high-pressure bubbles, if you will. That is, the high pressure comes in, and when you have high pressure, you've got clear skies. And when you have low pressure, that's when you start having clouds and weather changes and things like that. Well, we've had this high pressure kind of sitting over us here in Texas for a while now, and causing our temperatures to rise. So, you know, the climatologists, the folks that are screaming, the politicians that are screaming climate change, you know, all this is based on man's activities and burning fossil fuels. So we got to do something about fossil fuels, and we're generating too much carbon dioxide. Well, the reality is it's a much broader and much more complex issue than the simple answer is, you know, we just reduce our carbon emissions and everything will be fine. That's not the case at all. So let's just look at what's been happening this year. And why is this year seem to be a little unusual than our normal weather patterns? Well, the first thing that happened was a volcano has been erupting.
Underwater submarine volcano, maybe.
Yeah, it's under a subsea. I guess it must be half sea. Volcano. Is erupting and spewing a lot of water into the atmosphere. And this subsea volcano is called Hunga Tonga Hunga Haiape. So the Hunga Tonga Hunga Haiape volcano is erupting and adding an additional 10-13% of water vapor into the atmosphere, in the upper atmosphere. And it turns out that the greatest contribution to global the greenhouse effect is water. So the more water you pump into the atmosphere, it's going to block more of the sun. It's going to cause more of a greenhouse effect, and temperatures are going to rise.
Yeah, and you can't blame the volcano on mankind. I had nothing to do with it.
Are you sure? You didn't light a fire under it or something? I don't know.
Not to my knowledge. Could have been an accident, I suppose.
Man didn't have anything to do with this, but it's spewing out water into the atmosphere, and 90%, 98% or more of the greenhouse gases is water. So when you add 10% or 13% more, that's a lot of water in the atmosphere, and that's going to heat things up. CO2 has a very minimal effect on greenhouse gases, but of course they don't tell you that. They just want to do away with automobiles and anything producing carbon dioxide. So carbon dioxide isn't really the factor. The other thing that's been happening, which is affecting Texas weather, is this condition called El Nino. And El Nino is the waters have been heating up. And we go through cycles of El Nino and La Nina. El Nino is the warmer because he's male. La Nina is the cooler because she's female, obviously.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And so the waters in the Pacific have heated up, and we have this condition called El Nino.
Now, this specifically, as I understand it, this is the water off the west coast of South America in the Pacific Ocean.
In the Pacific, yeah. Yes, it is. And it causes a kind of reverse in currents, and it brings the warmer waters up the coast, which then, you know, affect us, quite a bit.
Well, I'd like to submit I didn't do that either.
You didn't.
I've done nothing to heat or cool the water in the Pacific Ocean.
Well, there must be somebody doing this and stirring the waters up. I mean, you know, this just doesn't happen by itself, even though it's been cycling back and forth for hundreds and hundreds of years, if not thousands. This effect has been taking place. So that's happening this year as well. And then there's a third component that we can kind of blame. And this El Nino pattern happens every 2 to 3, 4 years. It's, you know, it cycles through. Sometimes it's worse than others. This one, you know, seems to be, it's generating maybe a little bit more heat than some of the more recent ones. And so we're experiencing a little more heat, but even the effect is like a quarter of a degree Fahrenheit rise in temperature. So it's not a tremendous, it doesn't have a tremendous impact on our weather, but it does have an impact. Now, another one that is happening right now is the solar activity. And we've talked about sunspots and greater solar activity and programs in the past. But indeed, that the sun is picking up. It had been through a period of relatively calm, and now we're getting much more solar activity. And that's contributing to the planet warming up. Of course, if the sun is producing more energy and more radiation, then that's going to heat up the Earth as well. And we talked about the heat domes or the blocking patterns, you know, around Texas, but they're also in Europe, they're having similar type of conditions where you have these high pressures that just kind of hang on, and they go and they go and they just hang, and nothing seems to be able to push them away. I mean, we had a tropical storm and a hurricane down in the Gulf recently, last week, and you would have thought that might have pushed things away here in Texas, and it may have had a little bit of effect, but we still have warm and dry weather here. So these high pressures apparently can hang on for some time, but hopefully we'll get a break in that. So that's kind of the fourth thing. And then the other thing, this is more important for Europe, is that there has been a change in ocean circulation patterns in the North Atlantic. And this change is apparently caused by weak surface winds. So instead of having strong winds that would normally blow across the North Atlantic, we are experiencing some weak wind, surface wind patterns, which of course, you know, slows down the current, slows down the heat transfer, and so Europe is experiencing some increased in temperatures because of this North Atlantic weakness in the wind. Now, it is interesting that they pointed that out in this article as
there's a link to this Cornwall Alliance article in the chat window right now at brokenroadradio.com if you'd like to follow along or check it out later. So it's there for you.
So that particular, you know, pattern of weak surface winds kind of brought to mind one of my hypotheses. It's not a theory because it hasn't been proven yet, but it's one of my hypotheses about wind farms and wind turbines, for example. So if you think of it, a windmill. It, you know, spins as the wind blows, obviously. But what is the windmill doing? Well, it's taking the energy that is in the wind and it's turning a generator. And then, of course, the generator generates electricity and you know, powers various things that's connected to it. But the important part for this discussion here is that the wind turbine, the windmill, is taking energy out of the wind. And if you take energy out of the wind, what happens to the wind?
Good question. It moves more slowly, or it gets detoured in its normal course of direction. I can see a lot of things there that if we were covered with wind farms, and that sounds so organic, doesn't it? A wind farm.
Yes.
Sounds so innocent. it could change wind patterns over much of the world.
It can, exactly. It can change wind patterns. It could slow the wind down. You're taking energy out. You know, it's not going to blow as hard past the wind farm, for example, as it was coming into the wind farm. And so can some of these effects that we are experiencing, because we're planting these wind turbines at a tremendous rate. I mean, if you go to West Texas, you're driving out to West Texas and you see truck after truck after truck loaded with the big blades, you know, for these wind turbines. And so they can't build them fast enough.
Where is Sweetwater, Texas? Do you know? Is that out west?
I think it's out west.
Okay, because Sharon was pointing out a news story off the air this morning about the wind farms in Sweetwater, Texas. They're wearing out. They're disassembling them. They're stacking up the junk pieces right there in town while they build new ones to replace the old ones. They are not recycling all that material, which now is accumulating, taking up space, and turning into junk piles.
Right. And, you know, it's unsightly, for one thing, and it also is going to be creating an environmental issue. So these type of problems, they aren't really, you know, discussing when we talk about climate change and, you know, from a political point of view and wanting to change our energy source. And so, you know, if they did an environmental impact study, I'd love to see environmental impact study done, an actual, honest to God, you know, environmental impact study on what the environmental effects of these windmills are, wind turbines are, wind generators. And I think we'll find that it's probably causing much more harm to the environment than folks actually realize. Now, we haven't talked about solar because, you know, we don't usually think that solar is, you know, solar panels and solar farms are going to necessarily contribute to the environment. After all, you know, it's passive type of form of energy, even though you're covering a great, you know, deal of surface area with solar panels. But what happens to the energy? So with a solar panel, think about a solar panel. Solar panels are not white. They're not silver. They are this dark bluish, deep blue, you know, color to them. And so the whole purpose of a solar panel, obviously, is to trap solar energy and to convert that energy into electricity. But it doesn't do it 100% efficiently, and so it may, and I don't know what the actual percentage is, but let's say it's 30%, you know, efficient, or maybe even 18% efficient. I don't remember the exact number, but it's only trapping a certain, you know, smaller percentage of the solar energy that is striking the surface. What happens to the rest of the energy that strikes a solar panel? I bet that if you touch a solar panel, it's going to be a bit warm.
Yeah, it would be pretty darn hot, I would think, yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
That's why they put them on their roof now, or out in desolate desert areas. It doesn't interfere with, you know, humans aren't endangered by them, at least not directly.
Not directly, but indirectly. You know, if you're talking about wind patterns and temperature and all of this, wouldn't they indeed increase the temperature of the local environment where the panels are, especially these big farms that have acres and acres of solar panels? Wouldn't they, you know, contribute to the heat? Now, if they're out in a desert, you know, sand, for example, is pretty reflective of solar energy. So it, you know, kicks back into space some of the energy that it receives. But if you put these dark panels out there, that doesn't get kicked back. It gets, you know, absorbed.
You know, there's another factor in this you haven't mentioned that the article does refer to, and that's the urban heat effect, or urban heat island effect, like in Houston and in Phoenix and cities with a lot of concrete and a lot of solar panels. The air around those cities is superheated because of mankind's interference with it, and disrupting the natural flow of the weather. And that's what we're really talking about here with both solar and wind farms. Again, how nice organic names that are, farms. Oh boy. Human activity now is probably more intrusive on natural weather systems than CO2 ever was.
Yeah, so you have, the major cities. Well, probably any city is going to have some effect of being hotter in the city than it is out in the country, because of the concrete, because of the buildings, because of this absorption effect of absorbing the sun's energy instead of letting the energy be reflected back. And so you're going to have, you know, hotter cities. And with automobiles, of course, you know, you can say, well, the automobile is causing the heat. Well, it's not the automobile. It's the structure of the city, you know, that's causing this heating effect. And so all of these things are contributing. And, you know, you can point to one or the other that's saying, well, this is the cause of everything. And that's not the case. It's a very complex problem. And you've got many, many factors contributing to some of the things that we're seeing today and feeling today. And by the way, I mean, man has very short memory. But if you looked at the, you know, statistics in the past, look at temperatures in the past, there have been much, much hotter seasons than they are this year. And there have been obviously much, much colder seasons than we've had in the recent past as well. So we've got these fluctuations that take place naturally. But then man's activity, I think, you know, part of the problem here is that the mitigation with either the solar farms or the wind farms, for example, could be contributing, and those aren't being accounted for at all. Even, you know, doing some simple calculations.
Another factor I want to bring up here, and this is absolute irony in the movement to eliminate fossil fuels by building wind farms and solar panels. How much material in a turbine, a wind turbine, or solar panels is derived from fossil fuels? Oil.
Oh, I mean, everything is derived from
fossil fuels. What does it take to transport all the parts and then erect it on a site? Gasoline. Surprise. Or diesel. Yeah.
The blades are made of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're made of chemicals that come from fossil fuels. So to say that we're going to eliminate fossil fuels is absurdity when you're trying to replace these things with you know, devices that require fossil fuels to be made. Things used to be made out of metal or wood. I mean, I can remember even growing up, most of our toys were wooden toys or metal toys. One of the two, the metal ones kind of lasted a little bit longer maybe than the wooden ones. But those were the type of things we played with. Now, everything is plastic. You know, we used to make automobiles out of metal. We're making them out of plastic now.
Yeah, I suspect even Lincoln Logs, if they still exist, are plastic. Yeah.
Yeah, we have some old Lincoln Logs, and mm-hmm. they're still wood.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you go into a toy store and then look for Lincoln Logs, they might be out of plastic.
Mm.
So all of these things are petroleum, you know, petroleum products. The plastic wrap that's around your foods, you know, the packaging, the inks, all of these things that we just take for granted is made of petroleum products. So to say that we're going to be eliminating, you know, fossil fuels is...
Well, to think you can shut down the oil industry is absolute naivete and foolishness. And wholly inappropriate, certainly for government to be advocating, because they don't know what they're doing.
Well, maybe they know what they're doing because they're trying to destroy the economy. And if you destroy your energy source, for example, what better way than to destroy a society than to take away their energy? And so, you know, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but these things that don't make sense logically.
We need to apply clear logic to a lot of situations going on right now, and that would change things. And I don't want to get too political in this discussion either, because we want to be scientific, science-based on this. But the science is cool, clear logic. True science is accurate science, is the truth when it's properly done. And we are subverting that whole process here, in part with this argument for climate change and global warming.
Right. Well, I don't think anybody would really argue that the climate doesn't change, because it changes from year to year. Right.
I mean, I guess that's the unseen thing, because it's really what it's saying is mankind's interference with nature is causing climate change. And that is not provable by science.
No, not at all. And certainly trying to blame climate change or these extremes in weather conditions on man's activity, at least carbon dioxide. Now, man's activity can have an effect, but to blame it on carbon dioxide and then try to eliminate fossil fuels because of it is, in my opinion, ludicrous.
Again, this article from the Cornwall Alliance is very illuminating, and you can find a link to it at brokenroadradio.com. Just look in the chat window, click on it, it'll take you to that article. Otherwise, you can go to cornwallalliance.org, and they have a lot of very useful articles on the climate and other realms of science, and you find them a fascinating website, I think, cornwallalliance.org. Don is a member of the Board of Creation Moments. I want to mention that ministry to you. It's a ministry that just stacked up to here with scientific information in support of the biblical story of creation. And when I say scientific, that means that cool, clear logic is applied and combined with history, and you get a very solid story of the way things really are. And we thank Don for bringing that to us every week here on Broken Road Radio. Don, have a terrific week. Thank you for your efforts this week, and we'll look forward to next. Okay?
Okay, you folks. Have a great great week yourself.
You too. Thanks, Don.